proudly supporting WHYY, is New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, educating businesses, local governments, schools, and residents how to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing facilities with assistance from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, we'll examine how Pennsylvania can steer its way out of its public employee pension crisis. First, Governor Tom Wolf says a vote for his education funding plan will be a vote for lower property taxes. Wolf was in Delaware County today stumping for his budget. Residents and educators told him that they need tax relief and better schools, as WHYY's Bill Hangley reports.
Tashua Buxton moved to Upper Darby because of the excellent schools, but she says state budget cuts have taken their toll on academics while rising property taxes can't fill the gaps. Buxton says if things don't change, her family might have to leave.
Well, the tax environment is very high. There are a lot of people moving out. There's a lot more renters coming in, and taxes are as high as $11,000 and $12,000 a year. That's high.
Buxton's children attend Stonehurst Hills Elementary, where Governor Wolf met with educators and residents to talk about his plan to fund education. Wolf would cut property taxes, raise some income and sales taxes, and boost overall spending by about $1 billion. Republican legislator Jamie Santoro was on hand to tell Wolf that Upper Darby does need more school funding as well as property tax relief, but he still prefers a Republican funding plan that would keep total state spending right where it is.
The governor's plan, if you really look at it, you're getting 70 cents in new taxes and 30 cents in relief, and that doesn't work for me. The difference in the plans is it's a dollar-for-dollar tax relief.
Santora says, despite the partisan differences, he expects the two sides to find a compromise that allows for some property tax reduction. By law, legislators must approve a budget by the end of June. For WHYY News, I'm Bill Hangley.
South Jersey Gas is again trying to win approval for a 22-mile-long natural gas pipeline through the Pinelands. A proposal for a pipeline along the same route was narrowly voted down by the Pinelands Commission last year. WHYY's Carolyn Bierler reports that if approved, it would allow changing a coal-fired power plant over to natural gas.
The amended plan contains a requirement that the 24-inch pipeline send gas to the BL England power plant in the Pinelands for at least 350 days a year. South Jersey Gas Company Senior Vice President Robert Fatzinger says that addresses the sole reason the pipeline was rejected the first time.
We believe that the requirement of a comprehensive management plan of the Pinelands, that a project be primarily used to benefit the Pinelands, is satisfied by our proposal, and that 95% of the time will be serving a customer that resides in the Pinelands.
If it's built, the pipeline would supply the power plant with the natural gas it needs to stay open once it's no longer allowed to burn coal in 2017. It would also be an emergency backup natural gas supply line for more than 142,000 customers in Cape May and Atlantic counties. Jacqueline Rhodes from the Pinelands Preservation Alliance says that backup for residents living outside the Pinelands used to be billed as the project's main purpose.
South Jersey Gas is keeping the same line, the same purpose, repowering BL England power plant, yet suddenly they're changing their objective for building these things. All of a sudden, everything else stays the same, but now they're trying to say it would serve Pinelands residents, which I'm not sure how they're going to demonstrate that.
Environmental groups have vigorously opposed the project and say they'll continue to do so. The Pinelands Commission expects to act on the proposal within 3 months. I'm Carolyn Bieler, WHYY News.
Here's a candidate for the three most yawn-inducing words in the English language. Public employee pensions. But with Pennsylvania looking at $50 billion worth of state employee pension debt, those words are at the center of nearly every conversation in Harrisburg this spring. Keystone Crossroads' Kevin McCory guides us through the state's options moving forward, with input from some of those potentially impacted the most.
25-year-old Sophie Date absolutely beams with excitement when she talks about teaching.
I'm loving being in the classroom, and I want to get really good at teaching. And I know that that takes a lot of time and a lot of hard work.
Date is about to get her master's in education at the University of Pennsylvania. Coming into the program, she was fairly certain she wanted to join the profession, but after a year student teaching in a Philadelphia high school, she says she's found her home.
I just love being able to build relationships with students on a day-to-day basis and get to see their daily life and the way that they change and the way that they grow.
In a way, Date is exactly the type that state Republican leaders are banking on. People who love the profession enough that they'll still pursue it, even as lawmakers attempt to eliminate guaranteed retirement benefits. The state's in such a hole after a decade of underfunding its required pension payments that top Harrisburg Republicans say it'd be better to get the state out of the business of guaranteeing retirement benefits altogether. They'd like to move new hires, like, potentially, Date, into a plan where retirement security is tied to the stock market.
Retire at a certain age and live 30, 40 years on public pensions paid by the taxpayers is an arithmetic problem for us.
Senate Majority Leader Jake Corman has been the driving force behind rethinking the state retirement system.
And we just have to deal with that. And we have to structure a program that meets today's world, not, you know, a world that we lived in, you know, 40, 50 years ago.
One of the more compelling reasons for ditching pensions is that it takes taxpayers off the hook for lawmakers playing politics. Nathan Benefield is the vice president of policy for the Commonwealth Foundation, a free market Harrisburg think tank.
You don't see politicians running on, like, I want to fully fund the pension plans. That's not a good campaign slogan.
The biggest reason the state is facing a massive pension payment spike is because lawmakers, including Corman, voted to increase benefits and then immediately found other, more politically appealing issues to which to devote state dollars. This put Pennsylvania second from the worst in the nation when it comes to making its pension payments. Again, Benefield.
The politics really encourage the underfunding of the plans and overpromising of benefits.
But ditching pension plans, like has happened in much of the private sector, puts all the risk on employees, who, as the private sector has shown, are pretty terrible at planning for their own retirement. Steve Herzenberg is the executive director of the Keystone Research Center, a progressive-minded Harrisburg think tank.
So you're telling me that when someone's about to retire in 2008 or 2009 and they lose, you know, 20% of their retirement, you know, therefore they may struggle to make ends meet in retirement, that's a good thing? Clearly it's not entirely a good thing. And from our perspective, actually, the state is in a much better position than individuals to manage financial market risk.
But even if the state got rid of the pension system in favor of 401k-style plans for new hires, that wouldn't make a dent in the state's debt in the short term. In fact, it would cost more state money because new employees wouldn't be kicking into the pension pool that's helping to pay current retirees. So Corman also wants to reduce retirement benefits for current teachers, a proposal that, if passed, would likely face a stiff legal challenge based on contract law.
Okay, capitalism. Laissez-faire. What was laissez-faire?
Everyone do what they want.
Do what you want.
Hands off. The government should not get involved at all.
George Bazanis, who's in his mid-30s, has taught social studies at Central High School in Philly for 7 years. He entered the profession with a master's degree and the student loans that come with it.
It's just infuriating that teachers are the ones that are always, oh, we can go back on their contract. Their contract can somehow be obliterated without any consequences, whereas everyone else, oh, well, it's a contract. We can't change that.
Down the hall from Bazanis is teacher Alex Humes, who's in his late 50s and has been teaching in the district for about a quarter century.
The only option is to work longer. And if that's something we have to do, I guess that's what we have to do. I could work until the day I die, but when I retire, I'm actually opening up a position for someone younger.
Luckily for Humes and Bazanis, Governor Tom Wolf says he's against any attempt to ditch pensions or reduce benefits.
I come out of the private sector. If I had tried to go to somebody, a regulator, and say, I acknowledge I haven't paid what I should have into the system, and so now I think it's only fair that the employees take a bath, that wouldn't work.
But here's where the issue gets especially tricky. The pension payments that school districts have to make are going to be so high over the next few decades that financially struggling schools are going to be continually grappling to find the resources to meet the needs of kids. So district administrators like Matt Stansky, chief financial officer for Philadelphia Schools, are praying for some sort of measured relief.
on the one hand, yes, we need a good retirement plan to help recruit and retain highly qualified people. However, we also need good working conditions and to be able to provide the supports for teachers necessary.
In the end, Pennsylvania's current pension crisis essentially boils down to this question. Who should pay for the errant decisions of politicians? Students, teachers, or taxpayers? For Keystone Crossroads, I'm Kevin McCrory.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media initiative reporting on the challenges facing Pennsylvania cities. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. Taking a look at this evening's headlines, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter met with Democratic mayoral nominee Jim Kenney today at City Hall. Nutter took the chance to endorse Kenney's run in the general election.
I'm certainly pleased with his nomination. Look forward to strongly supporting his candidacy for the fall.
Kenney says he's learned to be more disciplined during the campaign and will work with the mayor, even though the two have clashed before.
We'll look to him for advice and some guidance as I move forward into the future. So I want to thank him for his work over the past almost 8 years now and for his endorsement.
Nutter and Kenney both went to St. Joe's Prep and have known each other for years, including serving together in city council. In Delaware, members of a budget writing panel in the state legislature have put on hold Governor Jack Markell's proposed elimination of property tax breaks for seniors. Markell has said cutting the tax break could contribute more than $12 million towards his budget balancing efforts. Several lawmakers say they intend to preserve that tax credit. 51 degrees, overcast on Independence Mall. It's 6:17. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Showers possible into this evening and then gradual clearing overnight, low around 48 degrees. Tomorrow, sunny to start, partly sunny by the afternoon, breezy. Friday's high 76. Sunny Saturday, high around 70 degrees. Sunday, partly sunny, up to 80. For Memorial Day, clouding up with a 30% chance of showers. Monday's high 82. Still ahead, 40 years after Lyme disease was identified, medical experts are still debating chronic Lyme.
And there's other people, you know, who think they have chronic Lyme who probably don't have an infection at all. There's a very wide range of what's going on.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. Master classes at PAFA offer students the opportunity to work with nationally and internationally recognized artists. From classical figure drawing with Juliet Aristides, pastel portraiture with Ellen Eagle, abstract painting with Jan Baltzel, to plein air seascapes in Cape May, New Jersey, with Joe Sweeney and more. Registration is now underway for summer classes. Details online at pafa.org/masterclasses.
Do you remember your first time?
My first time? First time of what?
It's a little uncomfortable. Should I talk about it now?
Your first time listening to NPR's Morning Edition, that is.
I was 6 years old riding around in my parents' car, and I was like, what is this stuff? And I just kept listening.
No matter how many times you've listened, listen again each weekday to Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us for NPR's Morning Edition, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on WHYY.
30 antique dealers from across the nation will be featured at the Brandywine River Museum of Art Antique Show on Memorial Day weekend, May 23rd through the 25th. This event presents a variety of American and English furniture, glass, metalware, ceramics, folk art, quilts, rugs, and more. All museum galleries will be open, displaying art by NC, Andrew, and Jamie Wyeth. Details at brandywinemuseum.org. The Brandywine River Museum supports WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The heated debate over Lyme disease is still going strong 40 years after the disease was first identified. WHYY's John Abbott reports.
It often begins with a stroll in the woods and a bite from a tiny black-legged tick. Lyme disease is a bacterial infection with symptoms including facial palsy, fever, headache, and extreme fatigue. Later, if untreated, memory problems, cognitive impairment, skin rash, and agonizing joint pain may also occur. Treatment is usually a 4-week regimen of antibiotics. But for some people, Those debilitating symptoms may linger for 6 months or longer. Lyme sufferers call it chronic Lyme disease, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention calls it post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. By any name you give it, medical experts disagree about Lyme disease. Neurologist John Halperin from Overlook Medical Center in Summit, New Jersey, says evidence shows antibiotics cure essentially everyone infected with Lyme bacteria, even if a second round of antibiotics is needed.
If in the course of that infection you've had some joint destruction from the arthritis or some neurologic damage from the inflammation in whatever nerve or whatever, you may or may not recover completely from that tissue damage that's resulted. But the infection, we know, can be eradicated in virtually everybody with antibiotics.
But Dr. Garth Ehrlich, a professor of microbiology and immunology at Drexel, says Lyme bacteria form a defensive biofilm, a protective antibiotic-resistant layer. As a result, the bacteria can survive, resisting both antibiotics and the body's immune system.
Antibiotics are designed to kill rapidly metabolizing, rapidly dividing bacteria. And so most of the bacteria in a biofilm are not rapidly metabolizing nor rapidly dividing. And so that provides them with protection from the antibiotic.
Not only that, Ehrlich says a patient's immune system may be unable to create enough antibodies to resist some particular strains of Lyme bacteria, and that can lead to chronic symptoms. Some strains also befuddle the standard test doctors use to detect Lyme. The ELISA test, the enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay, and the Western blot, which measures the antibodies that rally to combat the bacteria. Again, Dr. Garth Ehrlich.
These ELISAs are made with antigens from a particular strain of Borrelia burgdorferi. If you happen to be infected with a strain which is very substantially different, even if you've made antibodies against the strain that's infecting you, it might not light up on this ELISA.
There's another complication. Ticks can transmit multiple infections, so someone could not only contract Lyme, but other bacterial infections too, says Ehrlich.
So some patients, I think, really have chronic Lyme. Some probably have, you know, polymicrobial infections that are infected with multiple agents. And there's other people, you know, who think they have chronic Lyme who probably don't have an infection at all. There's a very wide range, of what's going on.
Halperin says people who have been treated for Lyme may also associate lots of future troubles with the illness. They make an all-too-human association with symptoms after they've been treated. He says symptoms for one patient may not be a case of chronic Lyme in another.
You have another patient who has the same facial nerve palsy, and they recover from that, and 6 months later, they're feeling achy and punky, and they're tired and having trouble functioning. Regardless of what their blood test says, they say, well, I had Lyme disease 6 months ago, I had the infection, I have these symptoms now, therefore these symptoms are related to the Lyme disease, regardless of what any blood test shows.
Besides extracting high costs on people's health, Lyme costs the U.S. healthcare system plenty. A study released in February by the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health says treatment for chronic Lyme disease costs $1.3 billion a year, an average of $3,000 per patient. Those costs are far higher than what it takes to treat a typical Lyme case, a trip to your primary care doctor, and a round of antibiotics. I'm John Abbott, WHYY News.
The United States hasn't participated in the Physics World Cup in 8 years, but students from Phoenixville High School in Chester County are about to change that. Five seniors won spots to head to Thailand this summer to compete against more than 30 other countries. The team is trying to solve problems like why clothes appear darker when they get wet. WHYY's Sarah Hoover sends us this postcard from their practice.
So, yeah, this is actually something that people experience in everyday life, filling up containers with particles of pretty much the same size. And what I'm really looking at is just how their shape matters in packing. My name is Brian Tu. I'm a senior this year.
So there's all these different things that you could vary. What should you vary?
My name is Jay Jennings. I'm a physics teacher at Phoenixville High School. The tournament gives 17 problems. They're open-ended problems. There's no correct answer. The students have to research past experiments, past theory, and then design experiments that allow them to understand and hopefully contribute to the scientific understanding of them.
My name is Andrew Mangabat, and I'm a senior. My project is called the Simple CD Hovercraft. It involves putting a bottle cap on a CD, poking a hole in the bottle cap, and putting a balloon over top of the bottle cap so that when the balloon expels air, it creates a little layer of air for the CD to sit on.
Mr. Jennings approached us at the beginning of this school year
regarding a pretty awesome opportunity.
The possibility of representing America and going to this tournament in Thailand really appealed to me.
I mean, it's an amazing, incredible opportunity. I'm David Nascari, and I'm a senior. Yep, see, plume of smoke goes up. Now I'm going to be analyzing what happens when it comes down. When I do this, I not only get a better understanding, but even if I'm wrong, it just helps me learn the thing better being wrong than if I had been doing a homework problem in class and got it right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then what we need to do is we need to find a way to measure.
My project is the moving brush project. It involves a vibrating surface with a brush on top of it.
As you can see, as it vibrates, the brush tends to move.
My name is John Lukowski, and I am in 12th grade. Because of my love for science, I found that applying it in this way could really help the scientific community, and it's helping me to learn a whole lot about research and experimentation.
But we need it very dark.
My project is the Circle of Lights. I am Carl Sewick, and I am in 12th grade. I plan to attend college and major in mechanical engineering, so I feel really good about myself understanding all this stuff, and it makes me happy and excited to see how I handle college.
To me, it's an amazing opportunity, not just from the science end of it, where they get to do research at, for the most part, a graduate student level while they're still in high school. But then they get the experience of speaking and making presentations and opposition. But they also get to interact with all these other people who are interested in science.
I'm kind of looking forward to see how other countries compare to us and to talk to the other physics students about what they do different than what we do.
We decided as a group that we wanted to change this, the situation where the U.S. wasn't participating. If we want to be at the forefront of science and technology, we have to engage with science and technology, and we also have to do it with the other countries.
Sarah Hoover sent us that postcard from Phoenixville High School's physics team. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help today from Steady Adam Stanishevsky and Able Alex Lewis. You can listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.